Welcome once again to our second series about angels and demons, the rather well-known book and movie written by Dan Brown. Once again, our commentator is Ron Eldred, who teaches religion and history at John Paul II Catholic High. I'm your host, Monsignor Larry Moran, pastor emeritus of St. Patrick Catholic Church at 19th and Poplar here in Terre Haute, where the Shamrock intersects the streets. Ron, welcome once again to the program. For those who maybe missed the first in the series, could you give a brief summary of the book, Angels and Demons, by Dan Brown?
The plot follows Harvard symbologist Robert Langdon, who also was the hero in the Da Vinci Code, as he tries to stop what seems to be the Illuminati, a legendary secret society, from destroying Vatican City with the newly discovered power of antimatter. Recall that the story gets started when Kohler, who is the head of an organization called CERN in Switzerland, finds one of his scientists, who happens to be also a Catholic priest, murdered, and he gets on the internet and finds, because there's some symbols there. The priest who's murdered has a brand on his chest, Illuminati, and rather than call the police, he gets on the internet and tries to find a symbologist, somebody who can interpret this amigram on his chest. So he gets on the internet, finds Robert Langdon, or the hero of the movie, calls him, asks him to come over. He has him flown over in some kind of an experimental jet, X-33, that only takes about an hour to get from Cambridge, Massachusetts, where Harvard's located, to Switzerland. He comes in there and he sees this amigram, this brand, and figures that it's the Illuminati that's done it. But there's also a note there, and the note says that a canister of antimatter, which was created there, and if the antimatter hits the side of the canister, which is matter, it'll cause a tremendous explosion. And so this canister has been stolen. That was the whole purpose of the murder, to steal this canister with the antimatter in it, take it to the Vatican, and then, of course, blow the Vatican up with it.
And hide it someplace.
And hide it somewhere in the Vatican, and only had 24 hours, of course, and then when the 24 hours went up, it blew up the whole Vatican. So that's where we were at up to this time.
All right. What is CERN, C-E-R-N, that you mentioned as this organization of nuclear research?
CERN is the acronym for the French version of the European Organization for Nuclear Research. It was established in 1954 and is the world's largest particle physics laboratory. It's located in the northwest suburbs of Geneva on the Franco-Swiss border. The organization presently has 20 European member states and currently has approximately 2,600 full-time employees, as well as about 8,000 visiting scientists and engineers representing 580 universities or so, and research facilities from about 80 different countries.
So this is a factual organization?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
One source says that CERN's main function is to provide particle accelerators and other infrastructure needed for high-energy physics research. Many scientists and engineers from throughout the world have used its equipment and resources to conduct their experiments. And it's also noted for being the birthplace of the World Wide Web. I've seen several programs in the last year on CERN.
Really?
So it is a legitimate, you know, organization. Brown didn't just, you know, make this up. And although he made a lot of mistakes about it, as we'll point out some of them.
Okay. And it's in Switzerland.
It's in Switzerland, right on the Swiss-French border.
All right.
One source states that CERN, quote, CERN operates a network of six accelerators and a decelerator. Each machine in the chain increases the energy of particle beams being delivered, delivering them to experiments or to the next more powerful accelerator, end of quote. CERN's main project over the past several years, has been to build a massive collider. That's what it's very famous for. The so-called Large Hadron Collider. I've seen a couple of two, three programs on that, which is a circular tunnel about 300 feet underground in the region between the Geneva Airport and the nearby Yarra Mountains. This circular tunnel runs about 27 kilometers, which I think is around 17 miles, if I recall right. I understand that one of the experiments conducted there is to send streams of atomic particles in opposite directions near the speed of light, which is about 186,000 miles per second, to produce collisions that break the particles into smaller subatomic units. And of course, when they, you know, do that, it releases energy. A major theme of the novel is about a scientist, as we pointed out, a Catholic priest, who was murdered because he was conducting such experiments to create antimatter. And supposedly his experiments would create the conditions similar to those existing at the instant of the Big Bang, the moment when the universe is believed to have sprung into existence about 14 billion years ago, thus proving the truth of the creation story in Genesis.
Okay, well, thank you for the summary. Let's go back now to Langdon and Vittoria, his adopted daughter.
The priest's adopted daughter.
Okay.
The scientist.
Scientist, who had just been flown to Vatican City from Harvard, Massachusetts.
When they get to Rome in a very short time, the Pope has recently died, and the papal conclave has been convened to elect a new Pope. As with hundreds of other mistakes in the book, Brown misnames the candidates preferiti. The current term, or the correct term, is papabili, a term that is widely used throughout the world to describe cardinals whom it is thought, you know, could be elected pope.
Okay. Not that they will be, but
yes,
they've got the qualities and people are talking about them and they're kind of the front runners.
Yes, you'd say they're potential candidates.
Okay.
Unofficial candidates. Nobody becomes an official candidate
okay.
for Pope, and, you know, and conducts an electoral kind of thing, but there's some of that goes on. Cardinal Martati, Dean of the College of Cardinals and in charge of the election, discovers that four Cardinal Papabili are there missing. That is, the four top candidates for the papacy, to be elected to the papacy, they're missing. Langdon and Vittoria begin searching for the Papabili in hope that they will also find the antimatter canister in the process and, of course, save the Vatican being blown up. Don't forget that the antimatter was set to go off in 24 hours from the time it was stolen from CERN. So they have only about 20 hours or so left to find it, or the entire Vatican will be destroyed.
Now, Vatican City is about 1 mile square.
Yeah, it's no more. It's less, a little less than 200 acres.
Okay. So it'd take St. Peter's down and the museum,
yes,
and Sistine Chapel and everything included in this actually smallest country recognized as a country.
Yes, in the world. And it's smaller than Deming Park.
Okay.
To give you an idea about how big it is.
Oh, that's a nice comparison.
Their search is assisted by the Camerlingo Carlo Ventrusca. He's the late Pope's closest aide, and the Vatican Swiss Guard also assist Robert in his search for the canister and for the four papabili, missing papabili, including, of course, the Swiss Guard commander Olivetti, and then Captain Rocher and Lieutenant Chartrand. Those are all supposedly Swiss Guard. He made a big mistake there, but I'm not going to point that out. I must clarify a big error that Brown makes at this point, though, in the novel. The Camerlingo and the Pope's secretary, or closest aide, are two entirely different offices. As described in the novel, Carlo Ventresca is the late Pope's secretary. He's also the Camerlingo. That is a regular priest. Which is usually the case. Usually the Pope's secretary is just a regular priest, probably given the title of Monsignor, you know, an honorary title. In reality, he couldn't be both. Vitresca couldn't be both the Pope's secretary and the Camerlingo, the latter which is always a cardinal and not just an ordinary priest. Brown mistakenly has Ventresca playing both roles throughout the story.
Now we may say, well, that's a small matter, but there are hundreds of small matters.
That's the thing.
That add up because it some there's some really big errors, too.
And I think there's a tendency, as I said earlier in the first session, is that people who are in error about small matters tend to be in error on big matters as well.
Okay, Ron, what roles do the Dean of the College of Cardinals and the Camerlengo play?
The Dean of the College of Cardinals is a cardinal bishop who is elected by the other cardinal bishops and is confirmed in office by the Pope. Although he presides over the consistories and congregations of the College of Cardinals, he has no authority over the other cardinals. He's sort of a first among equals, I guess you could say, among the cardinals. The decisions of the college are entirely collective. It is the dean's job to convoke the cardinals when the pope dies and to preside over the congregations in the conclave during that period of time until a new pope is elected. He is the one who asked the man elected to be pope to accept the position. Now the Camerlengo, or the Chamberlain, as he's sometimes also called, is the first to be notified and before top church officials certifies that the Pope is dead. Then he draws up, he's just an ordinary priest. Then he draws up the official death certificate and seals the Pope's bedroom and study. Afterwards, he takes charge of the apostolic palaces of the Vatican, the Lateran Palace and Castel Gandolfo. And after the Pope's funeral, he seals the entire papal apartment, having found quarters for those who have resided there to serve the Pope, like the papal secretary. Sometimes there's some nuns, you know, that cook and do things like that, who live in those nearby quarters, and some other servants and what have you. The Camerlengo is the head of the Apostolic Camera, which is a department of the Roman Curia, or sort of like the cabinet of the church, the top echelon of the church. The camera functions to ensure the continued functioning of the Holy See upon the death of the Pope. The Holy See just meaning, of course, not the whole church, but just the Vatican and the little country, you know. During the period of vacancy, he and his assistants gather reports from the departments of the Holy See, so the College of Cardinals is able to manage the ordinary affairs of the church. So the College of Cardinals is really running the church to some extent, not the Camerlengo. And in fact, not even the Dean of the College of Cardinals, because he's just sort of the first among equals in that group.
He's sort of the one who calls them together.
The coordinator.
Yes. Coordinator.
Essentially, the Camerlengo's in charge of the Vatican State during the interregnum period between popes, but he's not in charge of the entire church. That role belongs only to the bishops, and especially, of course, the cardinals. Well, getting back to the story, Langdon is convinced that the Illuminati are in some way responsible for the disappearance of the papabili. So he tries to retrace the steps of the so-called, quote, path of illumination, end of quote, which, as one source says, Brown claims that, quote, an ancient and elaborate process once used by the Illuminati as a means of induction of new members, prospective candidates for the order, were required to follow a series of subtle clues left in various landmarks in and around Rome. If the candidate followed the clues properly, he would be able to locate the secret meeting place of the Illuminati and be granted membership in the order. See, this really, end of quote, this is really supposedly back 300 years before this time, you see, that our story is about. And this Illuminati supposedly came into existence as a group of scientists who hated the Catholic Church and was going to try to, you know, be its chief enemy. And to become a member of it, there was a path of illumination, and there were secrets, and you would be given these clues, and then if you were smart enough, you know, to figure out all these clues, these basically four main clues, and then you would actually get to this place, then you'd be inducted into the secret society called the Illuminati. Well, using his extensive knowledge of religious and occult history, Langdon sets off to uncover the clues that will take him onto the path of illumination to rescue the papabili. and to locate the antimatter canister. Because you see, that's supposedly where they were to be, according to the note. They're going to be where this path, at the end of this path of illumination. So he's got to find that. He don't even know what the clues are. They're not even given to him. He's got to find the clues, and then he's got to follow the clues until he finds where the antimatter is hidden, and also where these papabili are at.
Because supposedly the Illuminati or the Illumined Ones or the Enlightened Ones, the Secret Society, have kidnapped them, they also have, they're the ones who have placed the antimatter nuclear energy in the Vatican someplace that's unknown.
Yes, the Illuminati. And all this has to be done in just a few hours because, you know, the clock's ticking, and at midnight it's going to be all over. So right now we're sometime probably about mid-morning.
Okay.
And so you've only got until, you know, midnight at night to find it. In fact, first you have to find the clues. You don't have the clues. You got to find the clues and then, of course, solve the clues.
Okay. Well, can you describe Langdon's detective work that leads him to his goal?
Well, as he uncovers the clues in Vatican archives and elsewhere, quote, I'm quoting here, the paths lead Langdon to four major locations in Rome. Each associated with what the Illuminati believe to be the four primordial elements of all things in existence, earth, air, fire, and water. At each location, he finds one of the papabili murdered in a fashion appropriate to the location's respective element and clues leading to the next location. End of quote. Describing the murders, one source says, quote, the first cardinal was brandished with an earth ambigram, had soil forced down his throat, and was buried. The second was branded with an air ambigram and had his lungs punctured. The third was branded with a fire ambigram and was burned alive. And the fourth was branded with a water ambigram and was chained and left to drown at the bottom of a large fountain.
Now these are the four papabili,
yes.
Those who were most probably or could be elected.
Yes, he finds all of these.
Okay.
As he follows the clues, each clue he gets to each of the four stations. At each of these four stations, he finds one of the four papabili murdered in the way that we just described.
All right.
To retrace our steps a bit, after finding the bodies of the first two papabili, earth and air, Langdon and Vittoria hurry to the Santa Maria della Vittoria Basilica, catching the assassin. They finally catch up with him, setting the third cardinal on fire. Recall that he had earlier murdered Leonardo Vetra at CERN and stolen the antimatter canister. Also remember that he's working under the orders of the Illuminati master, at least Janus, allegedly anyway, whose true identity, of course, is still unknown. Olivetti, commander of the Swiss Guard, is killed in an encounter with the assassin at this location, and Langdon is nearly killed himself. The assassin escapes while kidnapping Vittoria in the process. Boy, a lot of things happen in a very short period of time. It's really sometimes quite confusing. Langdon manages to escape a tomb. He gets locked inside of a tomb with a great big heavy concrete top on it, and he's able to finally get himself out of it. He'd been confined there, and he meets the assassin yet again at the final element's landmark, water, but he's unable to save the last cardinal. Following clues he found at the last location, Langdon's search leads him to Castel Sant'Angelo that hides an underground tunnel leading directly into the Pope's chambers to the Vatican. There he finds and frees Vittoria. She was, you know, kidnapped by the assassin. He finds her. That is after he escapes the tomb. And together they're able to send the assassin falling several hundred feet to his death at this last location. They hurry back to St. Peter's Basilica, where, as one source says, quote, they find that Kohler, the head of CERN, has arrived to confront the Camerlingo in private. Langdon and Vittoria fear that Kohler is Janus, and that he has come to murder the Camerlingo as the final step in his plot against the Church. Hearing the Camerlingo scream in agony, the Swiss guards burst into the room and open fire on Kohler. Just before he dies, Kohler gives Langdon a videotape that he claims will explain everything. End of quote.
Okay. Well, now all this is happening while the antimatter bomb is ticking.
That's right.
Okay.
With time running out, the Swiss guard begins to evacuate the basilica. And there are literally tens of thousands of people out in, you know, the big courtyard. As he is exiting the church, the Camerlingo apparently goes into a trance and rushes back into the basilica, that is, you know, St. Peter's, claiming that a large crowd, or claiming before a large crowd, and the BBC camera, the British Broadcasting camera, that he has received a vision from God revealing the location of the antimatter canister. The assassin has alerted the BBC so he could record the events of the day worldwide. So that's why the BBC there, you see.
British Broadcasting.
Yes. The Camerlingo rushes down into the catacombs beneath St. Peter's Basilica with Langdon and a few others following close behind him. You see, it's been revealed to him, you see, now. He tells everybody that God reveals this to him, where the canister's hidden. And so they rush down into the catacombs. There the Camerlingo finds the canister sitting on top of where else but St. Peter's tomb.
Which is directly underneath the high altar,
right,
up above.
Langdon and the Camerlingo retrieve the antimatter and get in an awaiting helicopter with only 5 minutes to spare, so it's 12:05 at midnight. The Camerlingo flies the helicopter, he also knows how to fly an helicopter, as high as he can in the time left, to about 10,000 feet up in the air, and then parachutes safely, where else, but on the roof of St. Peter's, just as the canister explodes harmlessly in the sky at 10,000 feet. Since there's no other parachute, see, Langdon's in this helicopter too, Langdon uses a window cover from the chopper as a parachute. And he holds this cover up in the air, and that as the parachute, okay, and that breaks his fall, and of course he floats. He lands in the Tiber River, and his fall, of course, is cushioned by the fast-flowing water, which contains a lot of air bubbles.
Okay.
Well, miraculously, he isn't hurt very bad. Meanwhile, the Camerlingo, he appears in a large crowd to a large crowd from the top of St. Peter's Basilica that faces St. Peter's Square, with the BBC broadcasting the scene all over the world. The crowd looks on in awe as he stands triumphantly before them with bared chest, exposing his brand to the world. He brands his own chest, you see, the Camerlingo. He has his arms outstretched as if nailed to a cross, symbolizing his saving of the church from annihilation. And because of this, quote, miracle, the cardinals in the conclave, they're in their meeting, you see, going to elect a new pope, they debate whether or not they should make an exception to Catholic law and elect the Camerlingo as the new pope because he had just saved the church. And I told you this was a pretty ridiculous theme.
Okay, I'm sorry. How about
you're so fascinated with the story?
Yeah, it's really kind of interesting. Well, how about the climax of the story? It is leading up to something.
Yes, we are in for a big surprise. Langdon returns to St. Peter's and shows Kohler's tapes to the College of Cardinals. The tape reveals the entire truth of the matter. When the Camerlingo returns to the Sistine Chapel to claim his reward for saving the church, Langdon, Vittori, and the Cardinals confront him with what they have found out about his scheme when they watched the video. The tape revealed at the beginning of the story that the Pope was scheduled to meet with Leonardo Vetra concerning his research at CERN. Vetra, who was a devout Catholic priest and scientist, believed that science was capable of proving that science could prove the truth of Genesis, a belief that was manifested by his research on antimatter. And this greatly disturbed the Camerlingo when he heard it, because he's in there probably when this Vetra's talking to the Pope. because he's firmly believed that the church alone, not science, should dictate the moral creed of the Christian faithful. Well, by discussing Vetra with the Camerlengo, the Pope reveals that his support is due to science having given him a son. This disturbs the Camerlengo so much that he doesn't wait to hear the explanation, which is the child was the result of all artificial insemination of a nun with whom he had had a platonic relationship when he was a young priest. The Camerlengo was horrified at this because it appeared that the Pope had broken his vow of chastity. A consequence, the Camerlengo plots to, quote, rectify the situation by poisoning the Pope and under the guise of an Illuminati master named Janus recruited a Muslim assassin to kill Vetra, steal the antimatter, and kidnap and murder the papabili, just as the papal conclave was about to convene. Later in the novel, Cardinal Martati reveals to the Camerlengo that he is the late Pope's son and tries to reassure him that the Pope's love for his beloved Maria, a nun, was a chaste relationship because it was conceived by means of artificial insemination, thereby ensuring that both parents remained faithful to their vows. But as one critic has said, quote, this explains the former Pope's love of and support for the science, since it enabled him to remain a celibate priest while becoming a father. But what Brown doesn't know, of course, is that the Catholic Church considers artificial insemination sinful because it separates conception from the conjugal act and considers the method of gathering sperm, of course, a sin. Well, we pretty much know the rest of the story. The Camerlengo planted the antimatter on top of St. Peter's tomb beneath the high altar of St. Peter's Basilica and faked his last-minute vision in order to be seen as a hero and a savior of Christendom by those who witnessed his brave acts. Of course, this means that the Illuminati played no actual role in any of the novel's events, and that as one source says, quote, involvement was merely a plot engineered by the Camerlengo to cover his plans. Well, as I said earlier, a last secret is unveiled when Cardinal Martati reveals that Camerlengo Ventrusca himself was the birth son of the late Pope, conceived through artificial insemination. It's come full circle, you see.
Okay.
Upon hearing this, the Camerlengo becomes overwhelmed with grief and guilt for having caused so much death, especially that of his own father, the former Pope, and as a consequence goes to the top of the facade of St. Peter's Basilica facing St. Peter's Square, soaks himself in oil, and sets himself on fire before a crowd of onlookers, in other words, tens of thousands of people. Of course, all of this is being broadcast by the BBC throughout the world. Afterwards, the conclave elects Cardinal Martati as the new pope. And of course, Langdon gets his reward from Vittori at the end of the novel for having saved his life and bringing her father's murder to justice. And all in all, besides being sacrilegious and blasphemous, I think that the novel Angels and Demons is unbelievable and silly.
Okay, but it certainly was another very good seller.
Yes.
Okay, well, we're run out of time. Thanks for the, we'll take up in the next round some of the details about what's really wrong teaching about the many, many teachings. To our radio audience, we say may God bless you all, always, and in all ways.